This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Know how it goes, shout out OCT. No real cap, call out what we see. Whole game ready, ball of blitz on three. No, you can't stand on your own 2 feet. I already know you can't ball with me. Come strap it up with the squad and me. They get a letter, they calling me. Ball alert. Ball alert. Ball alert. Ball alert.
Ball alert. Welcome to the Ball Alert Show podcast. Everywhere you get your podcast, please continue to like, subscribe, and share our YouTube page at Ball Alert TV. One time for Revolt TV. I go by the name of Ferrari Simmons.
OCT, what up?
You have the mayor, Mr. Andre Dickens, in the building.
Yay!
What's up, sir?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm glad to be here.
Now, this is a complete honor, man.
Yeah, honor's all mine to be here on Baller Alert. This is what's up.
And we're missing BT because he's the one who actually put this all together.
Oh,
he
said, BT.
Yeah.
That's it. That's my guy.
Yeah, so, you know, welcome to the Baller Alert Show. And just for everybody who doesn't know or unfamiliar, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you're from Atlanta, but what part of Atlanta?
What part of Atlanta?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Atlanta in Adamsville. That's the west side.
Adamsville, right? Okay. Where Killer Mike is
That's
from.
That's right. Yeah. Killer Mike is a couple years younger than me, and we and him, you know, grew up in the same general area, man. Like, west side of Atlanta. And I still live in Collier Heights, which is not far from, like, really where he lived, like, really close.
Wait, you still live there?
Yeah, I live about two neighborhoods from the neighborhood I was born in.
Wow.
So I've been all over the city, and I come back to my roots on the west side. So yeah, man, I'm from Atlanta. I went to Mays High School.
Okay.
Yeah, Benjamin Elijah Mays. I went to Atlanta Public Schools the whole way. My mama went to Atlanta Public Schools. All my aunts and family. I'm like a fourth or fifth generation Atlantan. So we like deep in this thing. And you know, went to Georgia Tech for college as an engineer, a chemical engineering major, graduated and, you know, did engineering things, ran businesses, and then went to Georgia State to get a master's in public administration later in life, and then ran for office.
Is that what it was, the public administration part that took you to?
Well, really, when I was 16 years old, I said I wanted to be mayor of Atlanta.
Mm.
So since I was 16, I've been talking about this job.
Why did you say that at 16?
So a little bit before that, I met Ambassador Andrew Young when he was mayor. Mm. And I was like, wow, this is the dude that you see in the school. So when you walk in the school building, you would see the president, the governor, and the mayor. Those were the pictures that were on the wall. And it was two white dudes and one black dude. All of them had on suits. And I was like, that black dude is important. He on a suit. And then in after school programs, I see him. And then at the Parks and Recreation, you walk in the building, it's the same three people, the mayor, the governor, and the president. And they were two white dudes and one black dude. And I was like, I resonate with him. What is he? He's always on TV talking about things he's doing. And so I said, man, Atlanta's great. I want to be the mayor of Atlanta. I want to be him. That was literally how it started. Now, I didn't know what a city council was. was. I didn't know what a commissioner was. I didn't know what none of these things were. I just knew that the individual that was big enough to be up there on pictures with the governor and the president, and that was always talking positive, like, I'm about to do this in the city. He was always, you know, in my line of sight as somebody I might want to be. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Atlanta was special, even though back then it was not like what it is now. Mm-hmm. But I knew Atlanta was special. And I was, you know, born and raised here. So I knew of Dr. King. I knew of Benjamin Elijah Mays, Coretta Scott, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, this ain't no place like this. So way back then I said I wanted to be mayor. So I kept moving my life towards that, even though I had to make money because I didn't know nobody in my life that was a mayor or in politics and stuff. So I was the first in my family to go to college. And when I went to college, I was like, let me do something that's going to, you know, work out for me financially. So I went down this path of engineering and business, but I never lost sight of, you know, what I wanted to ultimately be. So I was doing neighborhood, you know, president and vice president stuff and community leader and nonprofits and church stuff, always serving. And then eventually I just ran for city council and won.
Was there a particular person in your life that was guiding you to, you know, through all of that? You know, like you said, you never lost sight of that. You went to college, you're the first out of your family. You know, who was inspiring you this whole time?
I would say my mom. Even though she didn't go to college, she would have wanted to. She would have wanted to go to Spelman. She always sees Spelman as, you know, being from here.
Why?
She had my sister, my sister in high school, or just as she was graduating high school. And so that disrupted certain plans that she had. But she was like, Andre, no matter what, you're going to succeed. I had a cheerleader from the day I was born. My mom and my older sister, these two, I could move mountains. Nothing was ever impossible for them through, you know, for me through them. I always felt supported. Mm-hmm. And she put me in so many after school programs. Now, back in the day, stuff was $5 and $35 mm-hmm. for a whole summer or whatever. It was cheap. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, thank God my daughter's 19 now, because them $500 summer bills and $300 programs, you know, back then, my mama, she scrounged up $35, put me in baseball, put me in karate, put me in whatever. So she would hand me off to qualified people after school. Mm-hmm. And then they would instruct me even further, be like, hey, are you interested in business? I was in a youth business program at 8 years old.
And that probably was rare at that particular time frame, too.
Oh, yeah. It was rare. It was rare to have all that knowledge. Like, I was young enough knowing what a profit and loss was, what a revenue and sales and all those things. I had a bank account at 8 years old, even though, you know, I lived in Adamsville. Mm-hmm. But my mom put me in programs that were like, you are going to succeed. And I remember when I went to Mays, because Mays had fancy kids, right? Mays was preacher's kids, you know, all kinds of political kids and, you know,
Black
business owners. This was, you know, Mays, yeah, way back then, Mays was brand new when I started going there. I was maybe like the 9th or 10th class out of Mays, because Mays was the elite brand new school for all the fancy Cascade kids. Well, I tested mm-hmm. into Mays. My mom was like, that new school needs some more kids. So I was able to get enough grades to go from middle school. And
was there mixed race kids there? Or
it was all Black elite. Okay. This is Atlanta, Southwest Atlanta. This was Southwest. I probably, the whole time at Mays, out of 4 years, I might have been around one or two non-Black kids in any class I was in, wow, at most. But they were elite. They were kids that are, you know, very prosperous parents. And so they had, you know, I remember my first Friday of being in school, my classmate threw a pool party. I was like, what rec center are we going to? He was like, nah, my backyard, man. And we went to a pool at this dude's backyard. I had not seen that. Wow. Now, it sounds like crazy, but that's mm-hmm. back then. And when I went to that pool party, my mom said, you know, just because they got more money than you, they won't always have more impact than you or more class than you.
So you bringing up mom.
Yeah.
Where is dad? Where was dad?
Yeah, I grew up without a father in my household. So, you know, that was...
And you were the only boy in the house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was the only boy in the house, but I had a neighborhood full of boys. Mm-hmm. We had like 30 or 40 boys in this neighborhood. So I walk out the door, and there was a game of football going on, game of baseball, basketball. I hear basketball.
So you got what you need, kind of?
Yeah, I got what I needed. I mean...
But I know you had to ask mom a question eventually.
Yeah, and then the church had lots of, you know, deacons, and then baseball, you know, and basketball coaches. I have have an uncle that was crazy. You know, he would come around all the time, and he'd shoot like, you know, 1 hour worth of game to you. That'll last you a whole month. You know, don't take no wooden nickels. Put your knuckles up, and somebody come hit you, hit them back. You know, I'd be like, all right, that's enough skills for the week, for the month. You know, I was blessed, to be honest, man, that my mother, like, she didn't let lack be her mode of operandi. She didn't go around saying, I don't have, so my kid won't be able to be what he wants to be. She would find the resources no matter what.
But you're not from a side of town where you can kind of be, you got to be smart. You got to be tough.
Yeah.
To be from that side of town as well. So how did you maneuver through all of this? Were there any fight? Did Mr. Andre Dickens get into some fights sometime back in the day?
Luckily, Mr. Andre Dickens has not been in fights, but Dre, the youngin' growing up, I threw. We had so many fights over stuff like basketball fights in the middle of a game, or just you know neighborhood versus neighborhood fights. Luckily, this was before people were shooting and stabbing and stuff like that. The most was, you know, you just got beat up and you come home with a bloody lip.
You never get beat up though, right?
Nah, man, I ain't never get beat up. I might have, you know, I might have lost on the scorecard it once or twice, but not no KOs. Am I? You know, I got long arms and I can run real fast. But if he gets on, you know, I know where to go. But I mean, I used to grow up, we would fight in an instant and then people would break it up. But that was just boys. It was a neighborhood full of boys and we were outside all the time. So it was just hot. And
not like today.
Not like today. You know, you might be fighting over a Sega game or Nintendo or whatever they play, PlayStation.
Well, they fighting online now.
Oh, they fighting online now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that's, you know, that is why I'm so heavily involved now in trying to support our youth and trying to, you know, bring down violence and those things, because I had a rich childhood even though I wasn't rich, right? I have like a full gamut. Yeah, I just came up with that. I might use that again. Y'all record
Tweet that.
But it was valuable. It was very rich, and I had individuals that, you know, would steer me the right way, you know. But growing up in Adamsville, I'll give you an example. So, you know, crack was around back then. I saw somebody smoke crack when I was like 14.
I appreciate
14.
You saying this.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, what are you doing? And he got high right in front of us and started acting crazy. And I'm like, this is interesting. You know, like, why would you do this? And I never dealt with it, never stayed away from it, even though dealing might have been around and, you know, people doing drugs or selling drugs and stuff like that. It never interested me because I witnessed it firsthand. I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that. And my mother was like, don't you ever touch it. And so, like, I had other things to do. I was going to school. I was going to baseball, basketball, football, or programs that were, you know, very fun for me. And this lady would drive me around. My mom would get off work and drive me to wherever I needed to go. So parental support was crucial for me. But there was an example when my bike got stolen. So me and my best friend, Chris, we ride our bikes up to McDonald's with our grass cutting money. You know, you cut grass, you get $5, $10, you go up to McDonald's with it. Knowing full well that we're not supposed to leave our bikes like unchained or whatever. But we were like, we're just going in for a minute, get this McDonald's. 5 minutes later,
gone.
Bike's gone.
Mm. Both of them or just yours?
Just mine, because I was, this is also, don't leave your bike to be the last bike, because we just leaned them up against the store. I should have been the bike up against the store. His bike would have got stolen. His mama would have been the one mad. But no, he had to ride me back on his seat and handlebars and all that to get back home, waiting on my mama to get off work. Man, when my mom got off work, I had to tell her that my bike was stolen. And this is a bike she paid for two Christmases before. Man, she went knocking. We went knocking on doors near that McDonald's. And I am no lie. We like, come outside. Everybody Ooh. Out. Who got Dre's bike? And she lying to people. My husband is a police officer. He going to come up in. She doing whatever she can to finesse the situation. Still didn't get my bike. But I learned right then. She
a line pusher.
a line pusher. She ain't scared of nobody.
We'll be right back with more of the Baller Alert Show.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a special edition of the Baller Alert Show.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Mayor Andre Dickens. You are now tuned in to the Baller Alert Show. Yeah, so I knew one day I was going to run for mayor. So I was city council member, and then 8 years of that, I was like, okay, I want to be mayor. But Keisha Lance Bottoms was the mayor. I'm a friend of hers, and I thought she was going to run for her second term. Mm-hmm. Well, she decided she wasn't going to run for a second term. She said, I'm going to, you know, go do some other things. And so that night when she, you know, when the word kind of whisper came out, I was like, yo, I'm running. So I called my daughter I was out at dinner. And on my way home, I called my daughter, like, yo, let me talk to you. I'm about to do a thing. I'm going to make sure I got your support. And then she was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And then, you know, I called my team, which was my city council team, because I was running for city council again, running for my third term. We were, you know, we stopped that and immediately turned towards mayor. And I knew that there was two people already in the race that was running against Mayor Bottoms. And I was like, okay, but I'm running against them. I can beat them. And then I knew other people were going to get in. Folks started whispering about certain other folks were going to get in. I was like, I ain't scared of that. And so and eventually it was 14 of us in the race. And I won by 64% of the vote. But it was not easy. Mm. So you got to, you know, you think you're a city council people and people know you. Man, ain't nothing like the name recognition of the mayor.
Okay.
You know, you got to get the whole city support to be pumped up about what you're going to do. People say the mayor name all the time.
Yep.
They think, do something for me. This is what you've done for others. Help me out. So no matter city council, you might can rattle off one or two of them names, but you don't know them until you know, like, the mayor's like, for real. Everybody's like, okay. So I had to get my name up. I had to come up, you know, with my slogans, my ideas, get my team together. And then you had to go to all these debates. We went to 42 different forums and debates. It was just nonstop. And you got to raise a bunch of money, and you got to ask a bunch of people for their support. You got to build a team. You got to get volunteers. I had to quit my job because my job, you can't do all that at the same time. So I quit my job.
Because you had a job when you was councilman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a council person, you can have
a
job.
What was your job?
I was the chief development officer for TechBridge, a technology company. So I had a job that was
putting that degree to work.
STEM career, I was making money, but I had to stop that. Took a leave of absence, and I said, you know, they said, if this don't work out as mayor, you can come on back. I was like, all right, but this is God's plan. This is destiny. I prayed about this. So we won, and now I serve on their board as, you know, a supporter of TechBridge, but not, you know, I work as the mayor. So it all worked out. I know I'm making it sound easy, but it's a lot of days and nights to planning. And I lost 25 pounds during the process of running for mayor. Just the anxiety, just to being gone all the dang time.
I was going to ask you that because mental health is a big thing. And how did you stay, you know, on point or focused to finishing the job?
Yeah.
To getting to the finish line, Matt, for better terms.
You gotta do a few things.
Everybody's pulling at you.
Everybody's pulling at you. And everybody's saying, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to lose. Or you better do this so you can win. Or I got an idea. You got to go over here to these people and talk to these people. And you're like, this is Thursday at 3:00 and y'all want everybody to, you know, you want me to be in 5 places at the same time. I can't be. I got to choose, and I got to try to make things work for this campaign. Everybody's pulling on you all the time. And now, as mayor, everybody's pulling on you. So you learn how to manage competing interests. Like, there's various interests. Somebody wants a stop sign, somebody wants a traffic light, and they all got a pitchfork and a megaphone saying, do what I tell you. And so you have to learn to balance that. And I'm just talking about stop signs and traffic lights, right? I'm talking about other stuff.
You need to get on potholes.
Potholes or policing or fire stations or, you know, anything, you know, park swings versus park slides, you know, a basketball court or soccer field, you know, you got to manage these competing interests. And so what I do is I pray. I'm a Christian man. I'm a believer. I'm a deacon of a church. So I go into my own, you know, conversation with God about decisions that I make, and in the morning and in the night, you know, wrap up with that and try to make sure that I'm grounded. 2, I sleep. You know, people know that I'm up all the time. I work from can't see morning to can't see night. But once I get into my bed, I am out. I don't do all that sitting in the bed thinking about the next day, what I'm going to wear. You know, oh, I wish I wouldn't have said that. I wish I would have used this term instead of that term. I don't go down the litany of, you know, sure, things that are just keep you up. You know, yeah. No.
You probably wouldn't get no sleep.
Oh, I never get any sleep. I'm like out, and then it's tomorrow.
Is there a certain amount of hours? Do you get 8 hours?
No, I don't get 8 hours yet. I mean, I'm about a solid 6.5. Okay. Six and a half. I hit the gym. That's the other thing. As I go to the gym 3-4, sometimes 5 days a week, some kind of physical activity. You know, I work out in Atlanta at a nice gym, Union Fit, and also do a little running on the track near my house just to kind of stay, you know, physically ready. You know, you can't do all this work if you know, eating fried food and, you know, never get any exercise.
Y'all going to get there soon. I don't know when I'm ready for that.
Yeah. I do eat some fried food. Don't get me wrong. I'm from Atlanta. I tear something up. But you got to mix it up. Mm-hmm. Put a salad in there, please.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into some of the things that you have done. You've done so many things throughout your career, but, you know, as mayor, you have done a lot. And one of them was for a lot of people who love to go to the Beltline and, you know, enjoy that space. You did the inclusionary zoning policy where you did 15% apartments built around the Beltline will be for affordable housing.
Yeah. So, and, you know, when I got on city council in 2013 was the election, 2014 started. I started noticing things, being that I'm from Atlanta. Back then, people weren't talking about the need for affordable housing. It was actually like taboo, like, oh, affordable housing for those people that don't work. It's Section 8 and the housing is bad. But I was like, yo, I'm noticing like people that have, you know, salaries and, you know, good quality of life are now struggling because it's harder and harder to live. Atlanta's becoming more and more expensive. I started saying that in 2013 just because I know my city. Mm-hmm. And but it wasn't talked about in political circles and in casual conversation, like, we need more affordable housing. But I'm like, yo, that rent is not supposed to be that much. And so then we started building out the Beltline. As it was being built, developers was like, yeah, people would want to live near this. This is beachfront property. It will be beachfront property. Yeah. Essentially. So people was like, yeah, I'll live there. I'll live in that. And they was putting nice amenities in there. But what I started noticing that only the, you know, well-to-do, only those that had nice jobs were able to live in there. And I was like, yo, what's going to happen for the teacher? What about the firefighter, the police officer, the nurse, the person that works at Macy's, at Starbucks, at the bank? How are they going to live in this city? This is going to be a problem. Now, I used to live on the West Coast for 3 years. I lived in L.A. and I knew San Francisco and L.A. and I knew, wow, these places have problems with affordability. And I was like, this can happen in Atlanta. So I created this policy that said that every new apartment that goes up around the Beltline has to set aside 15% of its units for affordability, meaning, you know, you can set aside 10% at 60% of the area median income or 15% of the units at 80% of the area median income. This allows for people, like I said, nurses, you know, teachers, firefighters, police officers, those people that in today's number in that $50,000 to $65,000, $70,000 range. These people go to work every day. They work very, very hard. But if a 55,000 there can't come out here and get a house in Atlanta, they're going to drive an hour to get to their job. But we want our police officers, firefighters, and teachers to live in the community that they serve. It makes them more knowledgeable about the people they're affecting or supporting. And so that passed. It was a hard lift because the state of Georgia has a policy that prohibits rent control. Unlike a New York or a Chicago or Maryland, they have rent control that there are certain properties that are capped. Atlanta can't do that because the state of Georgia prohibits it. So I got around it through some technicalities around what we use to build the Beltline. I said, this is, we actually, by building out this Beltline, we created a new economic opportunity for those developers, and they have to give something back in return, which is affordable housing. So to this day, it exists, and over 1,000 units of affordable housing are, when you look at these nice new apartments, actually mixed in those units are people standing right next to each other. Unit 112 versus unit 113, they may be paying different amounts and you wouldn't even know it. Mm-hmm. Because that is the quality of the policy that we put together.
And Atlanta is filling up fast. They come here because it's more affordable to live
than those other places. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We are growing. Yes.
I just, it was a report I just saw. We went from number 7 to number 6.
Yeah, we actually went from 8 to 6. We skipped 7. Wow. We went from the 8th largest city, metro area, to 6th that fast. And now 1.8 million more people are slated to come to Atlanta between now and 2050.
So you think that'll make us in the top 5?
Yeah, it'll make us in the top 5. If that's a big deal. People are moving more towards the South.
I think during the pandemic, too, they moved here a lot. And
we've seen
an uprising crime as well. So let's talk about public safety.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. During the pandemic, nationwide, crime spiked. It picked up because of people being in isolation, people feeling depressed, a little bit of anxiety, uncertainty. You think that we were all locked in, but once the pandemic started coming out of it in 2021, crime was high. We were at an all-time high, or at least near all-time high in 2021 from the last couple of decades. And so that was literally what most of the campaigns were about when I was running for mayor in 2021, was how are you going to bring down crime? People from, you know, all parts of Atlanta, south to the, you know, Buckhead to the east side, west side, everybody was
Buckhead
like,
wanted their own police.
Buckhead wanted their own police. Some people in Buckhead wanted their own city, yeah. Like mm-hmm, to break away yeah. from Atlanta because they were like Lenox. You know, they were very well publicized.
They pay a lot of money to live there. They want to keep it safe as
yeah.
possible.
They do, and so do everybody else.
Yeah.
And so people, you know, everybody thinks where they are is the worst affected, right? Mm-hmm. Buckhead, like, oh my God, somebody got shot at Lenox. And I'm like, yeah, that should not happen. But somebody got shot at Greenbrier. That should not happen right. either in Southwest Atlanta. That should not happen anywhere. Life is precious. So mm-hmm. I come into this thing saying all of us deserve to live. And, you know, people were, you know, taking various political angles, whether it was Democrat, Republican, whether it's black, white. I believe that, you know, all of us actually care about public safety. I'm a father. I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. I want her to be safe. You know, black folks want safety. White folks want everybody in between, young people, middle people, you know, all of the above. So I said we had to be smart on crime, though. And so, one, the methodology is important. We don't want to come out here and just police our way out of this problem. Mm-hmm. Police, you don't want to turn into a police state where you got, you know, all like over-policing, because that's just historically leads to the other challenges that you have, which is excessive use of force, or people feeling like they're going to be victimized by the people that are supposed to protect them, or that you will end up in a situation where you feel like you can't move because somebody's always on your back. No, we want to use non-policing and policing actions. Yes, we need police because some things are violent crime, but there's also, we needed more street lights because crime was happening. When I, you know, being an engineer, I said, do an overlay of where the crime is and then do our street light, you know, map. And you would see like where it's darker and with less light, it was a propensity for more crime and crashes, car crashes, bicycle crashes, etc. So came in with the Light Up the Night campaign, where we added 11,000 street lights in the first year and another 10,000 in my second year. Now it's brighter in these areas that were darker, so you can't get away with more dirt in the dark. You know, I mean, when it was dark, you could, in the light, you can't. Then we saw nightlife crimes was our problem. If you recall back in 2020, 2021, they were shooting up the club. Part of that was people coming from other places because Atlanta was open.
Yeah.
So when their city was closed.
I was a DJ, so I was there.
Yeah. East side in Atlanta, no west side in Atlanta. We ain't got a beef because we know what the understandings are. But if you coming out here from St. Louis or Chicago or whoever, and you're trying to get in, beef started to cook. So what we started to do was say, hey, how do we make sure the nightlife is safer? So we train, right now, we train nightlife operators on how to de-escalate, you know, fights. So just because you take people's guns and don't let them bring guns into the club don't mean that when you kick them both out that they're not going straight to the trunk and shooting each other in the mm-hmm. parking lot. So we taught them how to, one, keep the aggressor inside of the building, let the lesser leave, get 30 minutes gone, and then by that time the aggressor's going to chill out and he don't know where the other one is, and then now they can all go home safely. And then we taught them about, you know, alcoholism, how to make sure that these bartenders don't keep pouring for somebody who's clearly drunk, this and that, and the lighting in the parking lot and these other things. I'm harping on that to say that I get very granular about how we make, you know, decisions in the city. So police is one thing, non-policing. And then the last thing is to really, we saw that a lot of crime was happening with our young people. So if we bring down youth crime, we bring down all crime, because there's so many things that they were doing. It was 14, 15, 16-year-olds shooting at each other. Mm-hmm. And so we did the Year of the Youth, which was hugely successful last year, which gave them so many things to do. The very things that I did when I was younger, all of the after school programs, all of the summer jobs, all of the training, kids were making money. They were having fun. They were in art school. They were getting internships. They were at, you know, Tyler Perry Studios or Coca-Cola or working in the mayor's office. 5,000 teenagers worked last year and made $17 an hour average wage. They had money. They were having fun. They weren't trying to do crime. And so we had 46% reduction in youth homicides last year. So that is a non-policing action that made it better for young people, which brought down crime. So they weren't doing, you know, the things that were leading to the challenges that we saw. And that's how we brought down homicides 21% last year.
Speaking of out-of-towners, do you feel like Atlanta's, or is Atlanta being affected by the illegal immigration crisis?
Not yet in a not in a huge way yet. Atlanta right now, we have a few individuals that have migrated here. These individuals are coming through various points, either through Texas or they go to Texas and then go to like a Denver and then they end up in Atlanta. But so far, we have not had the large amount of immigrants as a New York has had or some other places. They say we are poised to at some point get them if the border continues going as it's going. Right now in Atlanta, we're still under, you know, somewhere in that, you know, mid hundreds and not thousands mm-hmm. of individuals. And so
how can we prepare for something like that?
Yeah, we have gone to the federal government, and for the number that we have asked for financial support, and we are applying that financial support to housing, so like hotels and to some of the, you know, clothing and food, and some of these folks have skills. They may not have the language, but they have skills. They know how to do construction or culinary, et cetera, et cetera. So some of this has been like, well, let's help them find a pathway towards a job or a business, and you know, some of that's moving forward. These folks are actually no longer in need of government support because they are working. Our economy is booming. We're in Atlanta. We're below 3% unemployment. So you want a job, you pretty much can find one. That means, you know, Atlantan or a newcomer to this country or this city. So some of them we've pretty rapidly in a short amount of time got them to self-sufficiency, and then others we're just taking it one day at a time and helping them. I'm still concerned, but we're dealing with it as best we can. I have a hotline directly to the White House because, you know, we make routine visits and we are consequential to this upcoming year's election.
Stay ready.
So if I need to yell for help, I can.
We'll be right back.
Stay tuned
with more of the Baller Alert Show.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a special edition of the Baller Alert Show.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Mayor Andre Dickens. You are now tuned in to the Baller Alert Show.
How can we get more young people? I have 5 kids, but I love my babies. But how can we get young people more involved in their neighborhoods?
Yeah, I would love that. I want a city where everybody participates, man. Like, these young folks got a lot of energy and they got a lot of, you know, ideas, and they are the future. Why not train them now? So whether that's if you want to work in come through the ATL Year of the Youth program, we have opportunities for them, depending on their ages.
Can we speak about that program? What's this?
Yeah, so anybody can go to ATLyearoftheyouth.com. So while we started the Year of the Youth last year, we're keeping it going every year. I'm going to call it the Year of the Youth, right? Because I think they're just so vital and so important. So in that program are various other programs that we support. We financially support nonprofits that are either doing, you know, whether that's sports, but some are doing STEM, some are doing arts and dance, some are doing, you know, chess and other skills games, and some are doing entrepreneurship. So, I mean, like, it depends on how old your kid is. Some programs are for middle school, and some are for high school, some are for younger, and some are even for college. And in internships, you can also, you know, contact us. Again, this summer, we are going to have jobs for young people. Some of them are in the government. Some of them are in your neighborhood. So we actually, we help fund nonprofits to pay for internships for kids. So let's say it's a nonprofit that just does community gardening. You know, there's some nonprofits that are in the area that are serving our food deserts, and they don't have enough money to pay an intern $17 an hour. Well, that's fine. We'll pay a portion or all of that young person to come work for you, because we want them to learn about urban gardening and urban farming. So that's, you know, so it just depends on your kid's interests.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about economics for a minute. You filled over 23,000 potholes. Lord.
And we got more to go.
Yes.
Hey, call 311 if you see a pothole. We're going to fill it.
Potholes.
Say it again.
311 if you have a pothole, and we try to fill it within a week, man.
Yeah, man. You're also a part of Invest Atlanta.
Yeah.
Can you let us know a little bit about that and all the great things that you guys have done?
Yeah, Invest Atlanta is one of the best organizations that a city could form. It is our economic development tool. I'm the chairman of it. The mayor is always the chair of Invest Atlanta. And I was on Invest Atlanta when I was a council member as well. And the goal of Invest Atlanta is to help small businesses start, and for businesses that are started to grow, and then to attract new businesses here to Atlanta. So it's all about, you know, so you might got an idea and you don't know what to do with it. Well, Invest Atlanta can help you get started. And then if you are started, let's say you are in business and it's you and you're, you know, just one employee and you want to grow, but you need a loan or you need a grant or you need, you know, to help, you know, expand, or you need to buy a piece of equipment. Let's say you're a pizza parlor and one of your, you know, ovens goes down, or let's not go into negative. Now you want to open up and have another oven. Well, these ovens might be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So we help you finance that because we want your business to thrive, because we know that you will hire more employees, which then helps our local economy. It's you know, it's a great cycle. We have grants that we give out, which are grants are free, meaning you don't have to pay them back. So we have some of those, and we did about $9 million or so last year in grants, and most of them went to women and minorities, particularly on the South and the West side. So it was a big turnout of these grants went to communities in need. But then, you know, sometimes it's people that used to, in the past, we used to be like, hey, I don't want one of them loans. I can get a loan from the bank. I don't want to invest that land loan. Give me a grant, you know. And so now with bank loans being 7-8%, Invest Atlanta's loans are between 1-3%. So now everybody's like, yo, amazing. Let me get one of them loans, because a 1% loan is almost like free money.
And Atlanta's like the home of the entrepreneur. Like, everybody is an entrepreneur.
No doubt. Did you see Black Enterprise 2 weeks ago, or maybe last week, said that Atlanta is the best place to start a business? That's what Black Enterprise said, that Atlanta's the best place for you to start a business. And that's why everybody here has got at least a business on them. They might be working at a regular 9-to-5, but they also got another business. And we you know, we applaud that. We support that in Atlanta. You know, we want to help you succeed, because we know that your success means family success and community success.
Do you feel any weight on your shoulders when, you know, looking at other mayors that come before you, like the Maynard Jacksons, Andrew Youngs, and people like that? Do you feel any weight on your shoulders?
Absolutely. But I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. I wouldn't want to not be challenged in that way. The people deserve us to level up, to do even more, to stand on those shoulders, to not collapse under the pressure. It's hard being after Maynard Jackson, this huge legend. Yeah. Maynard Jackson.
And a lot of people don't know Hartsville Jackson yes. is the airport, yeah. and they are two mayors.
That's right.
William Hartsville and Maynard Jackson.
That's
just a fun fact for the people. Yeah, yeah,
that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. So maybe about 15 years ago, it was just Hartsville. But then Maynard Jackson, we added his name. And, you know, he was the first black mayor of the Deep South. And 50 years ago, we're celebrating this whole year, the 50th anniversary of his inauguration. Imagine being a mayor when a legendary mayor's hit his 50th anniversary. Like mm-hmm. right now, yeah. all day, every day is like, well, Maynard was doing this and doing that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I gotta catch up to Maynard. I've only been at this 2 years. I'm catching up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really a competition. It's more of an inspiration. Mm-hmm. It's looking at a man who, you know, I'm maybe go a little long, but I want to tell a quick story since we're talking to young people. Maynard became mayor at 35. This dude, but wait, there's more, as they say in late night TV. Mm-hmm. This dude ran for U.S. Senator at 30. In 1968, he ran for U.S. Senator. You only get two of them per state. He ran against an incumbent, a white man named Talmadge. Now, remember, this is 1968. We had just got the Voters' Rights Act in 64. So this black man runs in the state of Georgia to be the U.S. Senator. He didn't win, but what he saw was, I won Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He won Atlanta. And so he was like, well, you know what? I ain't winning U.S. Senator. I'm going to run for vice mayor. At the time, we used to have that. We don't have that now. Vice mayor. He won vice mayor by a big, huge amount. So he became the vice mayor of the city of Atlanta. Sam Marcel was the mayor. So then when the next election came around, he ran against the mayor. Sam Marcel was running for his second term. Maynard Jackson then ran for mayor. So Maynard ran for senator, then ran for vice mayor and won, then ran for mayor and won. This dude was relentless about getting to the goal. And the goal was to make sure that Atlanta was economically inclusive. He said that airport was, we were building the fifth runway, we were building this airport out to make it the world's busiest airport. And he said, stop all construction and I need 25% of all that construction to go to black-owned firms, minority-owned firms. Stop the construction. And then all these folks started going crazy, saying, what is he doing? He can't do that. He doesn't have the right to do that. No, we're in control of the airport. He said, y'all can have 75% of this great thing, or you can have 100% of nothing, because I will stop all construction right now. And the business folks and everybody got together and chopped up 25% and let it go to the minority businesses. That, to this day, still exists. We're at 37% now. But had he not started it, where would we be? So, yes, I live on, it's not weight on my shoulders. It's inspiration. So whenever I got to make a tough decision, I think about what would Shirley Franklin do? Mm-hmm. What did Ambassador Andrew Young do? We have the World Cup coming. Well, the Olympics these guys were doing the Olympics. And Bill Campbell and Ambassador Young were setting up the play to win the Olympics along with Maynard Jackson. And then Shirley Franklin was a part of that committee. So I'm looking at leaders as role models and inspiration. I talk to them. Unfortunately, I can't call Maynard Jackson, but I call his wife, Valerie Jackson. Mm-hmm. And we talk and she tells me stories and they give me ideas. And I feel supported. I can't ask for more than what I have. I'd hate to do this job if I didn't feel supported and have, examples.
Some of the things that you are doing now that's coming this year, I'll just run down real quick. Murphy's Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
With that, a new MARTA station at that location. Mm-hmm. And that is pretty big for the city.
Yeah, that's big. We haven't added a new MARTA station in a long time. So we're going to bring a new MARTA station. And that will be the first MARTA station on the Beltline. Mm-hmm. So you can, get off at Murphy Crossing Station once we build it. And Murphy Crossing is going to have affordable apartments as well as market rate apartments, some retail and all that stuff. But it'll be right there on the Beltline. So then you can take a walk, you can scoot, you can jog, you can do whatever.
You can ride the MARTA to the Beltline.
Wow. You can come straight from the airport straight to the Beltline at Murphy Crossing and then go on to where you need to go.
And you got three more MARTA stations coming too.
That's right. We are proposing three more and hopefully we'll get support from the city, from everybody to do so. But we think everybody's excited about it because I announced it and folks are like, yes. Mm-hmm. The one at Krog, where everybody right now goes to that Krog area of the Beltline, and then one at Armor Yards, which is like like northeast up there where the breweries are and in that area near where I-85, the Beltline and Buford Highway area. And then one on Joseph Boone, which is on the west side, not far from the AU Center and Martin Luther King area and, you know, going towards, you know, Grove Park and that area. So I think it's going to be phenomenal that people, and all four of these are on the Beltline. So you can take MARTA to the Beltline in four different places, get out and walk, or eventually, you know, we can have some transportation on it. So I'm trying to make sure that we grow this city out in the right way. Connect us.
Is it time?
Yep.
Yes. Let's go, let's go,
let's go. Can you give us five of the best wings in Atlanta?
Five of the best wing spot. Mayor Andre man. Dickens.
Well, I'm a lemon pepper head.
Yeah.
Right? Love lemon pepper. So, you know, I like J.R. Crickets. I love Wingstop. I know Rick Ross.
Wait, you said
Drake.
J.R. Crickets. See? They was getting on me by J.R. Crickets. Go ahead, continue.
J.R. Crickets is a staple.
J.R. Crickets, Wingstop. I even, you know, we got ATL Wings not far from my house. We got JJ's. I don't know if y'all like JJ. So how many is that? That's four or five.
JJ's put the little stuff on the top.
JJ put the, what is that stuff? I don't know what it is.
Well, you can't say it, but you know, they call it the crack.
Yeah.
Well, it's white powder.
Yes. It is delicious.
Yeah, one more.
Oh, man. What
did
is,
you say American Deli?
I said American Deli. Okay. That's why I thought I hit five. Okay. I thought it
did.
American Deli. I love American Deli.
Yeah. All right. So one more thing. Keith Lee came here. He gave, you know, kind of gave Atlanta a satisfactory rating.
He's coming back, though.
But he's coming back. So where do you suggest that he go this time?
Yeah, man. Keith Lee, man. That was a bad week in Atlanta history, man. When he came out there and told everybody our food wasn't good.
Yeah.
Man, he something went wrong that day.
Where should he go?
So he tends to like grabbable food that he could eat in his car and talk about. So I wouldn't, you know, there's some fine dining that I don't think he's interested in. That's not his thing. So I would say like Local Green. Y'all ever been to Local Green over there?
Is that?
On Joseph Lowry with Zach. Zach is great. He got this new, I mean, now it's, they got salmon. They don't do beef and chicken, but got salmon, and this cauliflower burger is to die for. It is so good. And I know people are going to be like, wow, cauliflower burger. No, it's delicious. Tassili's. You ever had Tassili's?
I've had Tassili's.
Which is these great. These are kind of on the healthier side, but they're delicious. But then also, you know, I mean, Slightly Vegan ain't bad if he, but they now everywhere. It's an Atlanta, you know,
America
spot.
Trying to
but,
keep you slim and fit. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
But, okay, the other side of the game is if he was to go to Busy Bee.
Okay.
He can get some good Busy Bee fried chicken. And I love the Baltimore seafood. I don't know if you've ever been to, it's called Baltimore seafood, but it's in Atlanta. Let's not do that because it's called Baltimore. Maybe they got the ingredients in Baltimore. I want to get Atlanta. Do y'all like Spice House?
Spice House is good.
I love Spice House because I like Jamaican food and it's I like Haitian food and stuff.
Yeah. I like Mangoes.
It's
good.
Mangoes is good.
Mangoes is good. Right on Auburn
Avenue? Yeah. They got two of them. One on Auburn and one right there at Ralph David Abernathy.
Okay.
And now, so I eat everywhere. I mean, he could have gone to a number of spots. Like, I mean, I eat everywhere, by the way. So I'm thinking, I'm trying to stay away from too fancy. Like, you know.
Places that you know he going to go to.
Yeah. Places that he just going to grab.
But see, another thing that, He was talking about the customer service too.
Yeah.
So that was the thing that he was.
See, he went to some of the tourist spots on the weekend, and it's just long lines, and that's a challenge. I mean, you definitely have to be honest about that.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I like the food at those places, but you can't go there on a Saturday if you know locals don't do that because they.
Well, hopefully he'll find some luck at one of the places that you said. One quick last question. Where can I find a peach tree?
Yeah, see, so that's the deal. We talk about peaches a lot, but we don't really have a lot of peach trees in Atlanta. You'd have to grow your own in your backyard.
Okay.
But now you go North Georgia, you can get to some peaches, or South, you can get to some peach trees. But in the city of Atlanta, no, we ain't got that many.
Just street signs called peach trees.
We got, oh my God, we got all the peach trees.
West Peachtree, Peachtree.
Industrial, Peachtree Center, West Peachtree, Peachtree.
Peachtree Circle.
Yeah, Peachtree Circle. Peachtree Dunwoody, Peachtree, Peachtree.
Mayor Andre Dickens, we appreciate you for joining us on the Bother Alert Show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming through.
Nah, that wasn't bad. I'm sitting up here thinking of all the places I eat. I eat everywhere. And I'm like, why am I freezing up? And why do I sound so dang healthy? I'm like,
yeah, you hit us with the healthy stuff.
You're trying to keep us living fit around here.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, though, we do have a pep talk.
Hey, this is Andre Dickens, the mayor of the city of Atlanta, and my word of advice for you is to always aim high. Reach for your goals, because you just might hit them.
Can't get enough of Baller Alert? Follow us on all social media platforms at Baller Alert. Log on to BallerAlert.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.